I am Christina Cheka. I am principal consultant with KC Consulting. We offer strategic, operational, and sales planning for the flexible workspace industry. And we also service flexible workspace users as well, helping them with their workplace strategy. What?
I tell you how much I'm so excited to talk to you. So Christina and I met each other
over 10 years ago.
Yeah, because it's when I started my company. We were at an event together. I won't say what event it was because I'm a big fan of the company. But we went to this event together, and we literally have been like little partners in crime ever since. So she's seen me the good times and bad times of owning your own company. And she was like working for a corporate company, and now she owns her own. So,
yay!
Okay, wait. Composing. I want everyone to know who you are first. I mean, where did you come from, and what? Like, look, walk me through your like professional life.
Okay. Well, I originally am from Bloomfield, Connecticut. I made my way up to the Massachusetts area by going to Northeastern for my undergrad. And then my first job right out of Northeastern, I was recruited by a flexible workspace provider, suburban provider, very much in an administrative capacity, but that's what kind of dove me into the industry. And then I made some changes geographically, spent some time in Florida, and really cut my teeth on doing sales and marketing and learning how to talk to perfect strangers, which is like sales 101. If you can work a trade show and connect with people, you can do anything. And then I moved back up to this area about LinkedIn, actually.
Repeat what you were just saying, just because the camera cut out, your computer cut out for a little bit. Just like, so you went from Florida and then it just cut out.
Okay, I went from Florida. Sorry, I was just itching my nose. I went from Florida and we moved back up to this area. We realized once you are a Massachusetts person, I think you kind of belong here. And I was recruited on LinkedIn by a global flexible workspace provider. I opened their Boston office and I ran it for the last 10 years doing sales and operations. And through my time working with that company, I worked my way up to doing senior manager role, overseeing sales and operations for the East Coast region. And that, I mean, much like a lot of companies in today's climate, that particular firm reassessed a lot of their global strategy. And part of that strategy was redefining their core markets. And unfortunately, Boston was not considered one of those markets. So I found myself on the job market. I thought, why not just jump into the deep end and run my own thing?
Oh my God. Okay. So we're going to get there.
Okay.
Excited. But let's just like rewind a little bit more. So you're in Connecticut, you decide to come to Massachusetts to go to school. The rule of thumb is, oh, it's such a hard place to be. But once you're here, like you just said it, once you get into Massachusetts and we love you, we keep you, you can't come, you can't leave. kind of the rule of thumb. So the first virtual space, organization that you worked with, was that in Massachusetts?
That was in Waltham. Yes.
At the time, I'm looking at the timeline. So 10 years, you were with the past firm for 10 years. You went to Florida. So it was like probably about 15 years ago in virtual space was a big thing at that time because, you know, brick and mortar, being in that office space, traditional in every single way, people working virtual or working from home was like not even, it was just not okay at all. So what was it like back then? Because we're all living in it right now, but what was it like 15 years ago when you walked into this place where I took this job? Did it work? Did it make sense?
It did make sense. I think back then it wasn't so much about creating this amenity-rich community. I think it was a lot more of sole proprietors or kind of smaller companies that didn't want to get their own office space, because kind of you hit the nail on the head back then. Back then, what you did is you got office space. Mm-hmm. I think it was very different to what we see today, because now enterprise companies and really larger multinational organizations look to this type of service. Whereas back then, you didn't see that quite as much. I think it was just starting to kind of get a foothold with some of those bigger organizations that were realizing that kind of flexibility and different value spend for their fiscal real estate dollars could have been spent differently. That particular organization that I worked for was very service oriented. So one of the benefits that a lot of these smaller people got was the basics of having someone to answer their phones, having someone to help manage their calendar and do all of those little things. And I learned very early on the importance of that level of professionalism and why people want to connect with space in that way.
What was one of the biggest barriers that you had to deal with when you were there? I mean, again, you just got out of school. You got into this like job with this world that is very, very untraditional. What were the biggest barriers at the time?
I think, as much as you know me now, I'm not an introverted person. I think just out of college, I was just kind of finding my professional personality and learning how to get out of my shell a little bit. And even though you're doing administrative, you're learning how to sell yourself and learning how to not be afraid of saying the wrong thing and how to genuinely connect with people. I think that was my first lesson in actual relationship building within a professional environment. I actually still talk to my manager from way back then and kind of keep up with what he's doing, and a couple of my old clients as well. So I think that was my biggest takeaway, is really gaining the confidence to cultivate relationships with people that are really meaningful in a professional environment.
So when did you decide that it was time for you to take a jump? So you were there for how long? And so you were there and then you went to Florida. And so what was happening in Florida that pulled you away from being here?
Well, within Florida, we had some family members that we wanted to be closer to geographically. And this was, of course, back when all of the projections for the Florida business market were so wonderful. And then 6 months after we moved there, the economy tanks. So you have to start.
Murphy's Law. You'd be like, of course it does.
So it just forced me to think outside the square a little bit from an industry standpoint and focus more on developing my toolbox of skills than necessarily going into the exact same industry, even though I really enjoyed it. I had to kind of shift to skill building just because of the climate at that time.
So now, what was the job in Florida?
I worked for a couple companies while I was there. I worked for an air conditioning company, and I had that was a long time ago. And my territory was Southern California. So I was traveling back and forth and doing marketing, and working with a lot of their, vendors. And then I actually worked
for. I just have to say, it's not a really hard sell for air conditioners in California or Florida.
Well, it's a commercial relationship.
Okay.
you're not selling to the consumer. You're developing vendor relationships.
Okay.
And helping them to allocate their marketing dollars. So I wasn't actually physically selling them the product. Although that would be entertaining, wouldn't it?
I feel it's hot. I think you need an air conditioner. So I love this because you are, it always makes me laugh because I have a lot of friends that are introvert extroverts, and versus me where I'm an extrovert introvert. And for people that are out there, literally you see this personality of this, like, I'm like always on. I'm like, this is me. I wake up in the morning. I don't do coffee. I'm just happy-go-lucky. I just pop out of bed. It's annoying to so many people in my life. But when I have my quiet time, I love my turn me off quiet time. When I'm done with speeches, I get off stage, put me in the corner, give me some food, and I'm just not going to talk to anybody because I've just like given you 120%. How did you turn that introvert into an extrovert? Because you're taking on roles that you're constantly having to communicate with other people.
I think just getting used to feeling uncomfortable and just kind of owning it and realizing the things that make you uncomfortable make you better as a person. And it's funny, a kind of side story. My mom and dad tell me a story of when I was a little kid of just not having the fear of jumping off the diving board, and that my brother would not jump off the diving board. And it was his biggest challenge of the summer. And my dad said, you walked up on that diving board and said, what's the big deal? And you jumped right off. But I can guarantee you, I was shaking in my boots, but it's like, if I don't just jump off the diving board, how the heck am I gonna kind of move forward and learn anything? So, I mean, I'm good with being uncomfortable, but I also am stubborn enough to say, I'm gonna work through this. I'm gonna get better. I'm not gonna not do something because it's new and foreign to me. And that served me very well. I've met interesting people and gotten to do kind of cool things within my career by jumping into the deep end and doing things that aren't easy.
So now you come back. So you decide that Florida is just not the place for you.
Yes.
The economy is doing some really, really funky things. And you come back to Massachusetts and then you get to the next place.
Yes.
In 10 years, you evolved so many different ways. Talk about how, when you first walked in, how the company was, especially because they were just coming, it's an international company. Coming into the Boston area, which is extremely saturated. It's a tough market. It's a top 10 market. But how was it for you in regards of finding your own way? But also in the 10 years, what was that growth for you like?
In the very beginning, I mean, I opened a center finishing construction that had zero clients. So some of it was learning how to sell this new product and how to communicate that differently, and what relationships to create in market. So I never really had those sales relationships and what I had done prior within the Boston business community. So it was getting out and going to network events where I met wonderful people like you. and really did.
Well, God, not only did we meet each other, but we sat at the same table and we were like, and it's like automatically we're like, oh, best friends forever.
I think when you talk about saturation in a market, if you can't be right on par with the branding and the saturation and kind of that marketing push that somebody has, you need to make your representation about yourself and your relationships, and having those clients that come on and that you really take the time to connect with them and care about them. I think over my time there, referrals were a huge part of how I was able to develop and maintain my business, client referrals specifically, because I think when you handle someone's business with care and with professionalism and really try and do the right thing by them, I think that always comes back around because they want to share their experience with other people. Through that time as well, I mean, I went through expanding the space, renovating the space, really learning all of those intricacies of the construction process was really interesting from a logistical standpoint. And as I took on more responsibility with managing more than just Boston, I really learned how to be a good mentor and a good teacher. I like to say I'm not good at teaching what the basic service is, but I can really teach you how to put a bow on it. I can make it so we're really fine tuning what you're extending to your clients. And I had a great time having team members in other cities that I was having calls with, that I was engaging with, that I was helping with marketing and how to interact with a broker and how to answer challenging questions. So it brought another level of challenge for me professionally in going from just managing my team of three people in my center to now having people who were previously my peers now be people that are learning from me. It was really exciting.
What was one of the, think about this for a quick second. You walked into this company and you were in essence an entrepreneur.
Yes.
Or you're inside, you had to develop, I mean, you're like wearing a hard hat. You go in, you have to design this entire strategy of like how this is going to look like, how we're going to stand and market to people. So you basically had the, it was the pre starting a business with somebody else's business. And so what were the highs and what were the lows in that situation?
I think in that situation, some of the highs, that's a really good question. I think some of the highs, I mean, every single sale and every single connection, even if I was just selling someone a virtual address, it was an achievement with every little bit that you did. Every sale was exciting. It wasn't a situation where I was ever jaded of, oh, this client's not big enough or important enough for me. I loved the little tiny sales just as much as I loved the big enterprise sales. I think some of the lows are, I don't mean to sound negative, but when you work with a corporate entity, even though you are totally responsible for the profitability of the business, there's still someone else making the top level decisions. Whereas when you're a true entrepreneur, you're 100% in control of every strategy, every relationship, every pricing decision. And when you work for a corporate entity, there's always a larger plan. And you're not always going to either be privy to it or have your opinion asked. So I think that would be the low, is really finding the balance of kind of accepting what you can control and what is never going to be in your control.
So March 15th-ish, rumbling happening. And you know, the funny thing is it was probably February, but I like saying March 15th-ish.
That's about what it was. Yeah.
Yeah. I was in Mexico. I'm hearing rumblings, toilet paper, and people are losing their minds. And then as I'm still in Mexico for a speaking engagement, canceled, things started getting canceled. And I'm like, that's like something really, really weird. Come home, we start shutting down. Your industry is all about individuals leaving their homes to be in an office space, not staying home.
Right.
What was that like at the beginning, right when the rumbling started for you guys? And how did you explain it to your clients? What was the trajectory of everything that happened to the point where you left the company?
So I think the biggest shift, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. This is an office-based industry. There's no work from home days. You go in every day. So, but I think one of the things about the firm that I worked for, we also did virtual office. So a huge number of our clients were people that worked from home regularly anyway. Mm-hmm. So the technology and the way that we were able to support them it was the same. So we didn't have to make shifts for that. The biggest shift was, how do you define when it's appropriate to still maintain team members and maintain meeting space? So I kind of oversaw that for the whole US, and we just had to keep track and define when stay at home orders and things like that were put in place, is when in-person meetings and all of that were basically nullified for safety purposes. As team members, we still went in because doing something as simple as mail that drives a lot of people's businesses had to be maintained. So we did that on a skeleton basis. But working from home just meant engaging with clients in a different way, thinking about marketing in a different way, thinking about what are some of the pressure points that your clients specifically are feeling that you can help be an expert and kind of talk them through things. Is there a really great article that's applicable to how COVID was applying to your client's industry, and really staying engaged in a different way? I think for many operators, obviously client retention was a challenge. Landlord relationships were a challenge, because it's this snowball effect of your clients want to have rent abatements, but you don't get a rent abatement. So it's hard to balance those types of requests. But again, it's just about digging into what the client request is truly coming from. And a lot of what developed over that time, I became kind of the queen of COVID for my organization. I learned way more about COVID operations than I ever thought that I would know. And I ran regular trainings of again, putting that mentor hat on and teaching other managers that it's really just about your client relationships right now. Like, people are scared. They don't know what's in front of them for their business. Be a resource for them and be a level of support for them. And that's really what, I mean, during that time, we lost very few clients. There was a first wave of virtual people, or people whose businesses were contingent on travel or things of that nature, that their businesses just went, they completely halted. But for the most part, we didn't have issues with people not paying their bills. People were very open and communicative, but that was a reflection of our relationship with them prior to all of this occurring. If that's a very long-winded explanation.
No, it's not. It's a great one. It's a great one because it opens up a lot of different questions that I have. But I definitely want to know, watching the real estate industry in its whole.
Yep.
You're hearing about it. You just said it, where it's the ripple effect.
Very much so.
We are hearing more and more about businesses that want to get a reprieve from governors, mayors, city halls, etc. In your opinion, what should, I just would love to get your thoughts.
Sure.
What should these political figures do? Because I went for a run yesterday, and I went in a direction that I usually don't go.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed like 5 stores that were closed in my, a stone's throw from my window. And it breaks my heart, because those areas are going to be closed. I mean, who's going to really build up a business brick and mortar right now? So what should landlords do to try to keep those businesses in place?
I mean, I think retail is its own animal, just because people are shopping differently. I'm not as much of an expert in that realm, but I think when we look more from the office space perspective of really identifying first and foremost, why, what bucket does this client fall into? Have they legitimately lost their ability to create income? Are they just kind of worried and seeing a change in their income? Or are they just reaching out to see what they can get because they're afraid of missing the boat and getting what everybody else is? I think first thing is diving in and understanding kind of where people fall. And then I think landlords are having to get creative in creating things that are more flexible, or if they're giving people relief, getting back and kind of an increases on like a rental term. There have to be ways that kind of benefit. And I think I totally see it from both sides. And I think what a lot of businesses don't understand about the landlord end of things is landlords have the properties financed as well. Like, they still have to pay on their end. And it's that same snowball effect that I experienced with my clients. If your fiscal obligation isn't negated by what's going on in our economy. So until political figures change that very top tier of those fiscal obligations for the people that actually own the real estate, you're not going to be able to effectively kind of get that ripple effect and have benefits for the people that are users of that space.
Well, then I'm going to flip it on the other end, where a lot of Silicon Valley organizations are saying, you know what, we don't want our employees to come back until 2021, maybe May, maybe September of next year. So now all those buildings are empty. They're realizing, you know what, we didn't think we could do our jobs effectively virtually, and we're like nailing it now. We're like nailing it. Does it make sense to actually even have a brick and mortar, being a corporate company, having, maybe we just rent a space and have our big, huge corporate events to see people. But right now, everyone's happy living their lives working from home. What about those individuals that, I want to break my lease, I don't need it anymore?
I appreciate that the way people work has obviously changed greatly, but you've signed a contract, and unless you have a contract that allows for, you have a really creative force majeure or something like that, that allows you out of that lease, you still have a fiscal obligation to that landlord. But it's about communicating to them. And really, it is, it's open lines of communication, I think, is the best way to go. I also look at the whole work from home in a little bit of a different perspective. I think there are some industries that, yes, working from home, they're just as productive. They find no change in their collaboration. But I think there are a lot of industries where collaboration and productivity and growth is kind of driven by in-person interactions. And I think having those types of environments, maybe not as one main location in a central business district with 90,000 square feet, maybe they look at it more of a blend of, okay, in this market, we'll use a virtual office. In this market, we'll use a flexible office. And I think looking at flexibility for the team more so in terms of where they're geographically located and giving them different types of ways to work. Because not everybody, I mean, some people don't want their dog barking in the back of their Zoom call. Do you know what I mean? And the kids are all schooling at home. I would imagine that somebody might want to escape that homeschooling environment for an afternoon to get some work done. So I think it's more about creating flexibility in different types of space for your team versus saying, we're just doing working from home. Because I just don't think that is a long-term strategy. I think eventually collaboration and productivity in some industries are going to suffer because in-person interaction, even socially distanced, I think is a very different thing than just Zooming with everyone all day.
Oh my God. So I love that you said at the beginning before we start recording, I'm nervous. Hello, great answers. Love it.
Well, this isn't really my wheelhouse. I'm used to being in person. That's the difference. This is very.
But 10 years, you're at this company. You've developed your brand. People know you. I've been to your office like many, many, many times. Rockstar. I mean, from the way that you treat the individuals, like literally at the front door, security, always straight through the elevator. I mean, it's like everyone loves Christina. I mean, you have built that relationship where everyone is your equal and everyone loves you for that. And now 10 years later, you leave.
You know, what was interesting is when clients were notified that we wouldn't be moving forward in that location, one of the biggest and I would say best surprises was almost every phone call that came from a client, the beginning of the phone call was, oh my God, are you okay? How can I help you? And that is, it really warmed my heart and broke my heart at the same time. Cause I'm like, all of these people that are such great clients for so long, that was the hardest thing for me, was knowing that I wasn't going to be supporting these people every day. But the care with which so many of them have reached out, was just it was very telling of they felt about me the same way I feel about them. And we were equally invested in our relationship in the same way. So that was a really great silver lining to come out of a not so great situation. And I think now, I mean, one of the things that I've been doing is staying in touch and kind of reconnecting with clients that I had for many, many years, and connecting in a different way and kind of forging a new relationship to see how we can have a cross referral partnership, even though we might be in different industries. How can we benefit each other? And what does that look like now? Is a lot of the interactions that I've been having, and they've been very well received and very successful thus far.
I think that's one of the things that people aren't paying attention to. Well, you know, at the beginning I was telling people, like, don't call and sell, just call and check.
Oh, of course.
And I think that there's a lot of people that were just scared. They were so scared that they were just like, I need to sit there and get some money in the door. I'm like, well, you know what? It's not the time. It's not the time. Find ways to bring people together. And I go, and it will be a full benefit afterwards. But right now we just need to make sure that everyone's okay. And I love that they checked on you when you were checking on them. It was just like, I was just going to call you. No, I was just going to call you. So I do really love hearing that. So many times people are just, again, a lot of people run off of fear. We run off.
Yes.
Of fear. I mean, it's a natural humanistic characteristic. And during this time, fear was at the highest level. And so to be able to remember that there's still a human person on the other end of the conversation that needs to be had. And even just when you said, keep the communications line open with your landlords, people are scared.
And so very much so.
They hide. I don't want to say, oh, knocking on the door, there's stickers. Well, you know what? They don't want to be the one that is the bearer of the bad news. And yet you're running from them, and you're forcing their hand at that point. And so I hear it so clearly, keeping that open line of communication and being honest and talking to the person, which I absolutely love that you have been the biggest advocate for doing that over and over and over again. And I've watched you in regards of mentoring your staff members doing it over and over and over again. 10 years, again, company closes.
Yeah.
What was that decision of, you are well known, you're well sought after, but you went and you decided to start your own business. Why? Why? I'm excited. I'm so excited.
But I've always had kind of an entrepreneurial spirit. And when I was reflecting on, I don't want to really jump into managing another space and kind of do the same thing. I want to support the industry, and I want to support my clients and my relationships in a different capacity. And I think the skills that I've developed over doing this for so many years, I have a very different outlook than somebody that hasn't been in the industry. I understand how to price. I understand the customer, and I understand the challenges that people are going through right now. And I think whether it's a boutique provider or a large provider, whether it's an individual user or an enterprise level user, I feel like I can have a level of understanding of kind of what drives a lot of the decisions for all of those different sectors within the industry.
Do you think the virtual industry will have a second coming? Meaning as in, a lot of people aren't going back to work right away, obviously. Mm-hmm. But every town now, city and town, has a little place. We have one here. Earlier when I started the podcast, I spoke to one of our like Noelle. She owns a local virtual space here as well. And I feel that, you know, and her office spaces have been booked. I mean, she restructured everything inside to literally make it where it's accommodating, because it is true. Like, you get fatigued being at home with the kids, the dog, the UPS, Amazon truck back and forth. What kind of resurgence, do you think they can have a resurgent and a resurgent or a second coming, as in it's going to be bigger than it was in the past?
It's hard to say because I think it's really going to be driven by how quickly vacancy rates come back. In looking at that as more of a marker, because if the vacancy rates for office space come back quickly, I mean, I just read a report a couple of days ago from Cushman and Wakefield, and the disparity between if vacancy rates come back well, they think it will be back to where we were pre-COVID by like 2024. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't go back as they've perceived it could, you could be looking at 2028. I mean, that's a huge gap in time frame for things kind of getting back to normal. Prior to COVID happening, there were projections that the co-working flexible workspace model was on track to do probably 25% of the market by 2025. I don't think it's going to be on that same trajectory. But I think that a lot more companies are going to look to this option in the short term versus a direct lease, because they're going to want to have kind of that hub and spoke model and have not only just one primary market. They're going to want options for where their teams are, which means being in primary, secondary, and tertiary markets and utilizing these little providers. So I think it's going to, for them, being looking at not just using like one provider, they're going to want to look first to where their employees are and kind of back into solutions from there to really find things that are going to be valuable to their employees. I think the virtual office end of things, where people were already working from home and want a professional address and want their phones answered, I see that as being one of the bigger growth potentials. In the 2021 range specifically, as people are looking to get back, you still need that professional support. So I think the virtual is where a lot of companies are going to look kind of going next year, and having something that allows them on-demand access to a variety of geographic locations.
It's so funny that you, when you're saying the virtual, like with the phones, I mean, I'm just envisioning Lily Tomlin back in the day, comedian, where she's like literally plugging the phone where you're like, you're at home and she's plugging your call into this call. And just because people were in different locations. But I mean, I think that is one of those moments where, yeah, so I mean, no one has a landline anymore.
Correct.
You want to have that corporate call coming in and you want to have someone professional versus a stage recording. And so that someone pick up your mail. Yeah, the basic things where
yes,
you run a business. And for small businesses in particular, since I target the small businesses, small, medium businesses, they want to look as in they're bigger than they are. So as they grow, I mean, some of them want to look bigger than they are. And some of them like are getting bigger and they just need more. They need extra support. And this is where you would come in so well. Not you, but like the organizations that you support would come in so well. So you've been working for so many people for such a long time, and now you're on your own. You're the consultant now. How does that feel? And what was it like when you shut one door? And I mean, like, mind you, you've shut many doors before, but on your terms and you designed, but now like the pandemic basically kind of said, no, it's our term. And so now you started this company. How has it been for you?
I would say it's equally exciting and terrifying all at the same time. It's the best way I can describe it, really finding what even starting and kind of, okay, I've got to make a logo. I've got to kind of set up my new email, like all of these things that I've never done before, like becoming the jack of all trades and things I never thought that I would be doing, mm-hmm. Like marketing collateral and managing social media posts and all of those things that are part of running a small business has been a learning curve for me. Mm-hmm. But I think on the personal side, it's been so great to be home. I mean, I've worked my entire professional career 9 to 5 or many times much longer than that from commutes. And I think the biggest thing that suffers is being able to be home. And it sounds so cliche, but having the work-life balance and being able to spend time with Brandon, my husband, and our dog Rocco, and having better balance has been one of the more and flexibility to go have lunch with a girlfriend or to go see my mom on a Wednesday. Those have been such refreshing things that have been positive right off the bat. But it is scary building your pipeline and not having that payroll that's just waiting for you every 2 weeks and really having to be aggressive and figure out where your next kind of revenue is going to come from is a scary thing.
So if you're talking to us, you're talking to me, the best client, who's that client that is the ultimate person for you and what could you do for them?
So there's two kind of sides to what I do. On the operator side, those would be the people that are running a flexible workspace or virtual office environment. The range, I mean, something as simple as making sure your services are priced according to what the competitive marketplace will bear is one thing. And then looking all the way up to how to engage your team and really create benchmarks from a revenue perspective that help to drive your profitability and help to drive your client retention. Mm-hmm. And on the user side, it can be as simple as your neighbor across the street is thinking of opening their own business and doesn't know how to utilize virtual offices and wants to talk to someone that's an expert and can kind of help you weed through everything to find a solution that fits the needs of your business. All the way up to a more enterprise level entity that is looking to see how they can leverage virtual office and flexible workspace across their US portfolio. So it's a wide range, but anybody, I think everybody knows somebody that falls into one of those categories.
I think that, well, you know, the thing is, when you're looking at a virtual space, I mean, I think that for anyone that's out there, when you're doing it by yourself, you forget that there are individuals that have done it before that are, they're experts. They specialize in this and they can make it that much easier. It's the whole tech concept of, I have an older sibling. They've already made the mistake. I want to sit there and like watch them and not make the same mistake. And I use that analogy sometimes all the time with people because people are like, no, I can do it. I can do it. I'll just Google it. I'm like, you could, or you can sit there and work with someone that's a specialist and really get the job done very, very, very well. So I think that's one of the things that people forget, that there are experts like you that have been doing it for quite some years. And you started doing it at the beginning when it wasn't a thing. So you've Yes. evolved with it as it has grown throughout the community. And you're going to be part of it when it goes into this next level.
Very much so. And I think a lot of times people look at the money spent, right? That's always a consideration. Well, I can just do it myself. I don't want to spend the money. My challenge to people is, what is the value of your time spent? It should be the value in engaging with your clients and developing revenue for your business. It shouldn't be trying to navigate an environment that you know nothing about when you have somebody that can kind of put a list of this is really what would work best for you just by taking a few minutes and learning about the drivers of their business. I think people need to be more protective of their time value and the value of their time spent with their clients versus not spent with their clients.
You have your own company now. There are people at home. I know you're like, I have my own company. people at home that are still working in their corporate offices and they're just like, you know what? I don't want to go back. Not because of the pandemic. I just don't want to go back to the company, but I've just been there that 1 year, 2 year, 3 years too long. And they want to jump ship with us there. Mm-hmm. You just said it. I like getting my paycheck. I like having my insurance. I like having all those things.
Yes.
So what would you say to someone that is researching it? They are so close to it, but they're just afraid. I mean, you had you had a choice, but your company decided not to go on in Boston. A lot of these people have choices where they're in a corporate office. They don't want to, they know that they can offer so much more, but they just need a little bit of a oomph. So what's that little oomph that you give to anyone that is considering starting their own business?
That's a good one. I think really if it's, it has to be something that you are super passionate about. If it's not an industry, like you need, it needs to be something that you truly enjoy doing every day. I look at the flexible workspace industry and I truly have a passion for it and interacting with clients and being able to make a difference in those businesses. So I think passion and kind of that drive is number one. But really digging into, are you looking to make this decision because you really enjoy working from home in your pajamas every day? Or is it truly that you want to make a change in your professional career? Because I think there's a very big difference between what's easy and comfortable versus what might be a little harder. And if somebody's making this decision because they like the idea of working at home and that flexibility, but it's not truly a driver of a passion for the business and wanting to make a change, then you've got to do a little bit of soul searching and really figure it out a little bit differently. I wish I had done this 2 years ago, quite honestly. I think
why?
Because I've always had this kind of drive. I think I was just always so ensconced with my client relationships and my relationship with my team. And I think that when you stay in an organization, just because of the kind of culture that you've created, it can be very difficult to leave. And I think now that people aren't going in and kind of experiencing the culture in the same way, it's causing more people to think about how things might be done differently. I think about it more so because now that I have the flexibility and I'm able to work from home and I'm able to kind of drive my everyday decision-making in a different way, it's really refreshing. As scary as it is, it's exciting and it's good to see things through a different lens for a change.
You said it so best. You get to the point where you're stagnant and you lose focus on things that you could do better. I always tell a lot of my clients that in order to work with me, it's required that you take a full day off, not on a weekend when you're doing chores, but a full day off, because when you're taking a full day off, you see the perspective of what your company can do and what you can offer. You could see everything from a different lens, like you just said, and it's really, really beneficial for their growth. And whenever they start with me, they're like kicking and screaming. They're like, no, I can't do it. I'm like, you can, because you have to put the oxygen on you first before anybody else. We know that rule on the plane, and yet they forget that so often when it comes to running their businesses, which is always so surprising to me because I'm not a rocket scientist, but I mean, it's common sense for me.
It's hard for people. They can't see it when they're in it. That's the difference. When you're in it and you have your blinders on and you think I need to work, I need to answer an email at 2:00 in the morning. Well, actually, no, you don't. Yeah. It's probably better that you don't. You don't want to set that expectation that people can just get you at any time of night.
unless you wake up in the middle of the night, you have a thought and you send the email. Cause like I've done that where like, I have a thought for a client. I send the email and they're like, did you? I'm like, I was just going to the bathroom. I had the thought. I did it really quickly and I went right back to sleep. Don't you worry about it. All right. My last question to you. If you had a professional, I ask this of everybody. So it's not like a shocker. If you had a professional and a personal ask, so it's not one or the other, it's both. If you had a professional and personal ask of anyone that's watching you right now, what would be your personal ask and what would be your professional ask?
Oh, goodness. Personal ask, I would love, one of the things that I've perfected or think I've perfected while I'm home is pan frying the perfect steak. So I would love personally any referral to really great Hulu or Netflix cooking shows that are like super fun. And then professionally, I think the biggest ask it would be if you know anybody that is kind of considering leaving a corporate entity or starting their own business and really just needs someone to kind of brainstorm things with and talk about the actual office-based kind of structuring of their business, I'd be happy to take 15 minutes and just kind of get to know someone and see what I can do to help them.
You are awesome.
No, you're awesome.
I'm so proud. I am so proud of you because, again, Christina was, I mean, we met each other when I first started my company, right out of my MBA, when I was just like, nope, entrepreneur by necessity, not by desire. And she literally lived through all my pains and gains, like all of them in the past 10 plus years. And so I'm like so excited for you because I want you to be like, I'm the oldest sister. Learn through me. Do not make the same mistakes. Learn through me in regards of the business. And so I love that you are going through this ride because this is going to be fun. It's going to be so much fun.
Thanks.
Sweetie pie, thank you so very much for taking time. I mean, this is like, I know you were nervous. This was so good. And you just fed us with such knowledge that most people just forget. They forget, they get complacent, they're fearful. There's like all these emotions that come with it. And this pandemic, brought all the emotions to the forefront, and you packaged it very, very well with what you said. And you've gone through the ride.
Yes.
You've gone through the ride through different economic downs and ups. And you still were able to articulate it so well that everyone's like, oh, but of course, duh. Well, why didn't I think of that? Thank you, thank you, thank you.
And thank you for having me.
Oh my God, you're so very welcome. And when you, at the end of the year or the beginning of the year, so December and January, I'm going to just like do a full wrap up with everyone just to find out where is everyone at?
Okay.
What's happening with industry? What's happening with you? It's going to be a different, it's going to be election year. So pandemics with an S, pandemics. We have the economy. We have the election. So it's going to be very interesting what December and January are going to look like. And so I want to get your perspectives on what we should be looking for, what we should be doing, and like getting a lot of people just to be guided, because sometimes people aren't listening to the news anymore because it's just so Debbie Downer. And the experts that we are talking to, the experts that I have in my life, you guys know well before anyone else in the news knows. So thank you very much. And I will be coming back to you.
Thank you.